This is the Edisto TV podcast, connecting the Blackwater region.
And welcome back. This is episode 9 of the Edisto.tv podcast. I'm here with Tom Slyker. Say hello, Tom.
Hello, Tom.
And this week we are going to have a little trip report. Tom and I paddled some of the Edisto this past weekend on Saturday the 19th with Jerry Bell and the group from the Bamberg Chamber of Commerce. We're going to talk about concerns on the Little Salcahatchie River about no flow and reported fish kills. J.J. Jowers of Bamberg is going to be joining us to talk about that a little bit. We're also going to talk to Ben Gregg, Executive Director of the South Carolina Wildlife Federation, get his thoughts on the Little Salcahatchie situation and other issues relating to our rivers. And we're also going to, for the history segment, have a piece of our conversation with Vince Furtick. We played some of that for you last week. This week, some recollections from Vince's salad days along the South Fork of the Edisto. And Tom, what is up on the internet this week relating to the Blackwater region?
Well, a lot of stuff going on the Edisto Concerns page, mostly related to low water. So we've got, there was an article that got a lot of traction with Aiken Standard talking about folks with their wells running dry. We had the low flows in the Salcahatchie. That was a front page story on the state newspaper. So also another one that got a little bit of interest was the Times and Democrat. Orangeburg Times and Democrat had their 100 objects in 100 days, and day 35 was the Edisto River. And so they had a pretty good write-up on the river. And so that's what I'm seeing out on Edisto Concerns, in particular on Facebook.
Okay. And yeah, the low water thing seems to be a definite theme in what we've been talking about. And let's talk briefly about our trip down the North Fork of the Edisto through where it joins with the South Fork to form the main stem, put in at Kilcare Landing and took out at Zigzag. And, man, talk about low water. We had it there, didn't we?
Yeah, it was low water. There was a few places where it was literally like you had to get up and drag your boat across a sandbar. Mm-hmm. A lot of blockages. But overall, it was great. We had a great turnout. It was 19 people.
17 boats.
Yeah, 17 boats. And so Jerry Bell and the folks down at Bamberg Chamber of Commerce, they do a great job. The shuttles were awesome because they drove us down to drop off our cars, and then they had cars waiting to bring us back up the river. So it was really well done, and I really do appreciate the folks at Bamberg taking care of that.
And we had a great group on the river. Scott Brome joined us, brought along some of the people from his Y Indian Guides chapter. And so we had some kids. We had some of us who are not quite children anymore. And just generally a great day on the river. Saw some good wildlife. Little blue heron. Saw some wood ibis. Saw a couple of white ibis. Saw Mississippi kites. Saw the ever-popular Prothonotary warbler. And an unidentified duck that might have been a young wood duck, but we weren't quite
sure.
Yeah,
there was definitely wood ducks, and there was definitely some red-shouldered hawks.
Yep, and also a little cattle egret that hopped down the river with us. Saw kingfisher. What else did we see? Buzzards. Saw a number of buzzards. So it was a great day on the river, and they will be doing the Bamberg Chamber of Commerce paddles on other stretches of the river in August and in September. Those are on the third Saturday. The group meets up at the Bobcat Landing there on 301 outside Bamberg, and then goes to wherever the shuttle takes them.
Right, and I'm hoping that before the next trip we get a little rain, and that Zigzag landing is almost unusable. It's very difficult. If we could get about another foot of water in the river, I think we'd be much better off. But getting out of the Zigzag was kind of tough. We had to walk through a mud canal, basically. I ended up with mud literally up to my waist. But,
right. For those who aren't familiar with Zigzag, it's actually not on the main stem of the river. There's a small oxbow lake that comes off, and then a canal leading to the boat ramp, which is at the parking lot for Zigzag. And at the moment, at the water level it was when we were there on Saturday the 19th, it was more a wade than a paddle from the main stem back down to the boat ramp there off the canal. So be warned if you're headed that way, but otherwise, beautiful stretch of river, highly recommended. Surprised about how many houses we saw there. I didn't realize it was that heavily built up.
For more information and archived podcasts, visit us at edisto.tv.
So, Tom, let's move on and talk a little bit about the Little Salkehatchie, which has been getting a lot of coverage in the press and also on the internet lately because water levels there are way down. And you and I went by and looked at it there on 321, and it had water in it, but I understand lower down it is drying out.
Yeah, so the Little Salkehatchie actually kind of parallels the Edisto from the towns of Blackville, Denmark, Bamberg sit right between the Edisto and the Little Salkehatchie. So it kind of gives you some framework as to where this is. But, and the Little Salkehatchie and the Salkehatchie, they come together. They ford the Cumbie, which feeds the Ace Basin. So we're talking about the Cumbie and we're talking about the Edisto, two-thirds of the Ace Basin, having serious shortages, not to mention, you know, the potential for agricultural withdrawal and all these other things that potentially be coming down the road. So it's definitely a big deal. This Ace Basin is one of the largest estuaries on the East Coast. It's very important to South Carolina.
Okay, and earlier today, I think it was it today or yesterday, you spoke with J.J. Jowers from down in Bamberg. And let's just jump into that and let J.J. explain a little bit about what's going on down there.
The Little Salkehatchie is much smaller than the Edisto, but it's very similar up in your area in Aiken in the size, and I guess the characteristics of it are not that much unlike each other up that way. Especially down when it gets around Bell's Crossroads where it's going dry. Now, when you get into upper reaches in Bamberg County, it's much, much smaller, and it dries up. I went down there to go fishing, and the fish were dead. And I've been down there a week or two ago. Everybody knows that happened the first time that's happened. That's the first time we've seen the fish die. But the last 10 years, that water's been getting way lower than it used to. It used to be in the summer, but 20 years ago, any time during the summer, you could put a boat in there and with a John boat with a motor on it and go up the river and go fishing. And now if you don't hit it within a 1 or 2 day window, you can't even get your sneakers wet in most places. But the further you go down, the less water there is in it. But it's supposed to look and run and flow and feel just like it would if you were in the Edisto and the upper reaches in Aiken County. And the Edisto River is a way of life. I mean, it's the backbone of the community, really.
Have you talked to farmers down in your area, and how do they feel about having to get a permit to pump water out of the river? Is there any concern about that from your farmer friends?
Well, most of my farmer friends are younger guys, and they're conservation-minded, and they're not very happy about. They like when they're not working. They like me. They like to fish too, and they're not very happy about it. But if they're not in a position to be very vocal,
do you believe that farmers should be able to take water from the river?
As long as it doesn't have no detrimental effect on the river, I don't have a problem with it. That's my river, your river, that's our river, and we don't have the right to take water out of that river for private gain. I'm not so sure that I understand how they get to do it or what the difference in me taking my logging crew down there to the state park and getting a load of logs would be. That's a public resource and a private entity getting it out. I'm certainly not anti-agriculture at all, and at every turn I've tried my best to make sure that everybody knows that. And I'm not into getting into anybody's living or how they do business. But we need to have some checks and balances, and all of us need to have our rights protected.
What would you say to anybody else who may have their own or a similar concern about their river?
You need to voice your opinion and let the people, like your legislators and people and your local councilmen, let them know what you're thinking. You can't stay quiet. At some point, you got to stand up. I, along with some other people, including Doug and others, have been very vocal about this and taking some heat. At some point, if nobody's going to stand up for my rights, I'm going to have to do it. And if I step on some toes along the way, I'm sorry. It's just, I don't mean to.
This is the Edisto TV podcast, connecting the Blackwater region.
Okay, so there we are. That's Tom and Marge talking with J.J. Jowers about the situation on the Little Salkehatchie and also more generally about water withdrawal from surface waters in South Carolina. Tom, anything you want to add on that?
Well, just, you know, he said something about, what do you do? You can't stay quiet. You know, at some point you got to stand up. And so I think that's a good intro to our next guest, who has been really devoted most of his life to protecting South Carolina's natural resources, and that's Ben Gregg. And so I was honored to have the opportunity to talk to him today with you, and I'd love to hear what he has to say here.
All right. And as we said earlier in the introduction, Ben is the executive director of the South Carolina Wildlife Federation, has a very deep resume in speaking out on environmental issues here in South Carolina. So here's our conversation with Ben Gregg.
Well, Ben, thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Well, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. I'm sorry it took us a while to get together.
Oh, no problem. I think the timing is perfect. I guess you are on a recorded line, and just so you know, we're recording this for the podcast. I don't know if you got a chance to hear it yet, but we've been basically broadcasting over the internet every week and just talking to people about the water situation, about the Edisto River, stuff going on in the Edisto, the surface water removal laws, and what we need to do to try to change the law. So that's kind of been our focus over the last 8 episodes, and
right.
We're talking to you for number 9.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you calling. It's it's a statewide concern, which I think you pointed out. Of course, you know, if you're gonna, the state legislature is ultimately the body that needs to try to improve our policies, and so it is definitely a statewide issue. But I think South Edisto is you folks are on the front lines, and it's really good to know that the South Edisto and the Edisto in general has such a strong band of advocates of, you know, from head to toe, all the way down the river. And if there had to be one river under the microscope, I am glad that it's the Edisto River. On the other hand, there are concerns, as you know, we're picking up around the state about low water in other systems, and I think the thing that is really disturbing is 5 or 6 years ago we were having droughts, and there was all the discussion about, well, you know, our rivers, most of our rivers originate in other states, so there was concerns about, you know, well, what are we going to do about these other states, and how are we going to control our water if other states really, you know, the source of our water comes from other states. And as we're finding out, there are river systems. Of course, the Edisto River is the biggest system, but there are systems in our state that originate within our boundaries, and those seem to be the ones under the most stress. So we can't pass it off. We can't pass it off on and say, oh, well, you know, the problem's coming from other states. The problem is coming from within South Carolina. We have control of our destiny, and we need to grab this as an opportunity to improve the current laws. And so I am glad that the Edisto is at the front of this, because y'all have y'all really have the heritage and the interest that is typical of some rivers or a lot of rivers around the state. And I'm really glad y'all are at the forefront, because y'all have the energy and the interest. Y'all realize how important your river is to your communities, and it's just great to be able to partner with y'all as we figure out where to go.
Well, great. Let me ask you. You wrote a letter last week to DNR that expressed three concerns. I think one was about the drought status. Another was, what about possible causes for the low, particularly we're talking about the Little Salkehatchie. And then the third was, you know, what is the situation with groundwater and surface water withdrawal? So could you just maybe summarize what you did as far as your letter to DNR, just kind of summarize what you were trying to say and what were you asking and where that stands?
Yeah, of course, I think most of your folks have probably been following the Little Salcahatchie where they've had a fish kill. I haven't gotten the figures on how serious a kill it is, but I think any kill is serious. And I think the cause of it was pretty evident. The water was so low that the oxygen was depleted out of what little water there was left, and so the fish died from oxygen depletion. But I think a lot of the issues that are raised there have already been raised on the Edisto, and we need to find solutions based on sound policy, and sound policy is based on accurate and good science. And I think that a lot of the conclusions that are being drawn somewhat out of necessity or being drawn as far as what the causes are, a lot of it's is anecdotal rather than scientific. And I think we need to do an inventory of what we have to assess these drops, these large drops in the rivers and creeks and streams, and go from there. But we obviously need more background, more baseline information when we're trying to figure out why these drops in the rivers are occurring. And I don't think in any case is it one thing. It's probably a combination of surface water and groundwater withdrawals. Combination with the weather, with the amount of rainfall, but you know there are other things that are possibly happening too. I mean, what about the dredging that's been done on the rivers, not just over the past year, but over the past 10, 15, perhaps 20 years? Is that a factor? Are we getting enough rain, but the rain, because of a lot of impermeable surfaces, is more of it flowing into the rivers immediately and not going into the groundwater? I definitely think, you know, we've got to look at the groundwater situation very closely, groundwater and surface water, particularly in the smaller rivers and particularly somewhere like the, you know, in the Edisto, South Edisto. Groundwater and surface water, you can't talk about one without talking about the other. So the frustration I guess I have with Department of Health and Environmental Control and Department of Natural Resources is that they have not dug deep enough to figure out what's causing this. I mean, I know DNR was citing the lack of rain, but you know, in concerns to the Salcahatchie, but at the same time, I was receiving communications regarding blue crabs on the coast, and one of their biologists was saying, "Well, you know, that there's an excess, a surplus of rain this summer, you know, in some areas." So, I think the rainfall has been spotty. I think that's a factor, but I don't think that's the only thing happening. It's just the river depths are dropping too fast and too low. Garrett Jobsis of the American Rivers just sent me a paper, and I emailed Tom and Hugo to you about EPA in Atlanta, which is the region that oversees South Carolina. And they cited a paper that says if the flows are altered more than plus 20% or minus 20% of natural flow, it will likely lead to impaired aquatic life. And the flows in some of our rivers today have dropped much below the 20% threshold. So this is a concern, and it's something we've got to figure out. The rivers are the lifeline for our entire state, and we can't just say, oh well, nature's taking its course here. We've got to figure out what's causing this, and our rivers are too important just to say, well, you know, we're going to be we're going to be accepting of this. I know just a year or two ago, and I guess it's still going on, but much of the West was in drought, and you'd read these reports about the Western rivers down to a trickle, and you know, the reaction, I think, of a lot of people in South Carolina was, well, that's something we got to worry about in 20 years maybe, but, you know, we don't have a problem like that. Well, all of a sudden, our rivers are drying up, much like the rivers out West, and this is something we just cannot accept as a norm. We've got to get on top of this, and we've got to make legislators realize how important it is to address these matters.
What's coming up in the next few months that the Wildlife Federation has going on?
Well, thanks for asking. We've got our auction on Saturday night, August the 2nd, and we'd love to have folks come to that. You can go to our website, scwf.org, to get information. It's we'd love to have you come to that. Also, for women, there is a we're having Women in the Outdoors retreat in September, and we have every year we have about 160 women who come to Hickory Knob. They come down to Hickory Knob and they participate. You have a choice of about 35 or 40 different activities you can participate in, from archery to skeet shooting to fishing to first aid to cooking in the outdoors. It just runs the gamut. And it's a great opportunity for women who are interested in honing their outdoor skills to come, and it's a lot of bonding and fellowship. It starts on Friday and ends on Saturday. I think it's the middle of September. I don't have the exact dates, but if there are women who are interested in that, just go to our website, scwf.org, and you can pull up the information. And those are the two main things that we have coming up. But the auction, back to the auction, which is Saturday night, August the 2nd here in Columbia, that's our biggest fundraiser of the year. And we call it our auction and wild game feast, because we have plenty of wild game there, and we have lots of different auction items for every budget. We have some, you know, on the high end, some on the low end. But we'd love to see folks there, and I know y'all came to our awards banquet back in February, and we really liked having you there, and sure do appreciate your support, and we'll keep you posted about our next awards banquet also. Probably be taking place in February or March of next year.
We certainly thank Ben Gregg for taking the time to talk to us. We actually had about an hour-long conversation, so that's just a fragment. We will be coming back with more of the conversation that we had with Ben in coming editions of the Edisto.tv podcast. Tom, any last thoughts on the conversation that we had today with Ben?
Just my admiration, I guess, of anybody who kind of devotes themselves to, you know, a cause like he has. And, you know, the South Carolina Wildlife Federation does a lot of other things. I'm hoping we can talk to them and about them some more in the future. But, I mean, it's just a really important organization in South Carolina. I think it's the oldest conservation organization. I think he said 1931 they were founded. So, you know, right in the middle of the Depression, you know, there was people saying, hey, we need to conserve what we have here. So, Glad to talk to Ben. I do appreciate it as well.
All right, and we'll be back with more of the Edisto.tv podcast right after this.
This is Tom from the Edisto TV podcast, and I just want to put in a word for Tyler Brothers. They've been serving the Blackwater region for over 100 years. Check them out at tylerbrothers.net, or if you're on Facebook, you definitely want to follow them and get the latest deals from them. You can find them at facebook.com/Tyler Bros. Tyler Brothers, since 1904, it's the place for you to be on a Saturday afternoon. They're open 8 to 6, 6 days a week, closed on Sunday. Stay away from the superstores and visit Tyler Brothers in Wagner.
All right, Tom. Well, we're coming towards the end of the 9th Edisto TV podcast, episode 9. And we're going to wrap it up with our history segment. This is a little more current day history. This is from our conversation a week or so ago with Vince Furtick. and he's reminiscing about growing up along the South Fork of the Edisto.
Yeah, Doug and my brother Wendell and I grew up on that river, and we hunted and we fished every chance we got. And when we got a driver's license, we had an old 67 Impala that we used for our hunting vehicle. And Doug had a dog, and the three of us, every weekend, we would head to the swamp. Now, if it was summertime, we'd go down and we'd go fishing. And we'd set trot lines on the creek, on the Rocky Swamp Creek. Rocky Swamp Creek is down between Springfield and Norway. On this particular, that's the land that my dad owns that adjoins the South Fork of the river. And we would go in there, and we would fish, set trot lines up and down the creek, and we would also set them on the river as well. Later, when we got a little braver, we put a boat in the river, and I think Doug had a boat, and he always was tinkering on things. We set lines up and down the river and spend all night. I can remember one year we took a group of people. My dad was involved here in the local Baptist church, and we took a group of the RAs down to Sand Hill Point, which is up here, just downstream from the Davis Bridge boat landing. And we must have had 15 or 20 fellas down there, all teenagers. And we were in the swamp, and we sat and set lines all night long. And some of them were small, and we sat there and we cooked right there at the Sand Hill Point. At that time had an artesian well there right there on the river, and you could drink out of it. That well's not there anymore. You know, that well's gone dry, and it's right there on the banks of the river. And I mean, it was there all my life. And but we spent a lot of time. It kept us out of trouble, and to a great extent. And Doug would have his dog, and we would hunt Thanksgiving. We would be down there all of Thanksgiving, and it would typically be me and Wendell and Doug, and then my daddy does not hunt a lot, so the person that taught us about hunting and fishing was Dude Strowman. Worked for my daddy from the year I was born until he passed away 10 years ago, and he was always with us. And you know, people used to say, "Well, y'all hang around that old black guy all the time." Well, we considered him family. You know, he took us hunting, and he took us fishing, and he taught us. You know, you don't waste what you catch. You don't waste what you kill. You eat it, and we did. And that, whether it be squirrels or rabbits, you know, deer, duck, catfish, eels. If you caught a eel, you ate a eel. That's what you did. And we all grew up, you know, just loving being down there. It was what we did. When we did chores or we did work, we worked to go to that swamp. That particular track has got some ditches in it. As I understand, they were some slave dug ditches from when it was a rice plantation way, way back. But they're very straight ditches that run through the swamp, and they don't really drain it. We used to catch the redfin pike, which I hadn't been pike fishing. I don't even know if there's any pike down there at all now. The ditches are still there, but they dry up every single summer. So I don't know that, you know, I just don't know how many fish they hold these days. It's changed. It's changed dramatically. The swamp's been cut and logged a lot, and the whole face of it. My children can't see it. My grandchildren can't know what I knew, and I regret that for them, because I love the river, and I loved just going to the swamp. Which, you know, the place that we have there has been family land for years and years, but it's called the pasture. We go into the pasture. We're going to the pasture because there is a big pasture field that my dad used to keep cows down there, but he doesn't keep cows down anymore. And we'd go down there and check the cows, and then we'd go fishing or we'd go hunting. That's what, you know, that's what we did every weekend we could. Very, very fond memories of Doug's dog Bimbo going down the tree of squirrels. And he'd put a bell on him, and he'd run deer. And we'd run deer usually one time around Thanksgiving. We'd take the dogs and run deer, but we also still hunted for deer and around Christmas. And we built little shacks, and one, we had one we built and just cut some trees down and put down four poles and put some tin on top and tin on the sides and just a one-room shack with a dirt floor, and we build a fire now and sit around and talk and get up early the next morning and hunt all day and come back and, you know, just sit around and talk and talk about, there's a lot of where I learned about life, you know, because you find out, I found out what dude thought about life from his viewpoint, and my dad would come down, we'd sit and talk with him, you know, sit around the fire, and it's right there next to the creek, and walk down the creek and go to the river. It's about a mile back to the river there, but it's a big enough place you couldn't get lost, but you could get away from anybody. You could be in that swamp and know that between you and the river and the gate where you came in, there was not another living soul within 2 miles. And it's just a part of me.
So there's Vince Furtick talking a little bit about growing up along the South Fork of the Edisto. Enjoyed our conversation with him. We'll have some more from him next week. He had some very interesting insight as a farmer on water withdrawal issues, so we're going to get into some of that next week with him. And that pretty much wraps things up. Tom, any final thoughts?
Pray for rain. We need rain. It'll help more than any other thing we can do right now.
All right. So thank you, everybody, for listening to Episode 9 of the Edisto.tv podcast. We'll see you next week.
This is the Edisto TV podcast, produced by Edisto TV, connecting the Blackwater region.